Episode 9 of Cultism with me, Harry Medium, and my good friend
Ian Todd.
The Toddmeister.
That's what the call is down the chippy. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So are you well then? Everything going all right in your cult world?
Yes, thanks.
I'm good.
I'm well into Get Glue, you've probably noticed.
Are you a gluester?
Yeah.
Is that an American thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of American shows on it. But it is, I'm just checking in, whatever I'm doing. Harry Medium is thinking about having a poo. You know.
Do they have stuff like badges or something on there?
Yeah.
Right. And it's not a real badge, it's a virtual badge.
But you can get real badges sent to you, I think, if you live in America.
And you don't?
No, I don't. I don't think they'll send them over here. I haven't got that far. You have to get 20 and then they send you a sheet of your stickers.
Wow.
Be quite nice.
It seems interesting. I can't help but think it seems like an adult version of where you used to collect ring pull tops to get like a yo-yo or something. You know?
Or pogs.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Pogs and yo-yos, you know. But yeah, the first thing obviously we're going to touch upon tonight is the Star Trek Doctor Who comic crossover thing.
Yeah. I didn't think it'd be much cop. You were far more gung-ho.
I get too enthusiastic about stuff. I'm like, it's going to be amazing, you know. Yeah. And then I get it and I read it in 5 minutes and I'm like, oh, that's all right. And basically the two plots weren't really intertwined, and then at the end there was a nice little it's come together, the two worlds. But
so the premise here is Doctor Who meets the universe of Star Trek.
Yes, like the next gen people, and you know, I dabbled a little bit next gen during the '90s, yeah. And it was all right, you know. But the big spoiler thing is obviously the Borg and Cybermen have combined, which is quite a cool thing because I think that kind of feels natural. You know?
Spoiler,
you know.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is pretty good, you know, and it would be quite sinister if it did really happen in the TV. But as I was saying off air, for me, I always like to see these things on TV rather than the comic. You know,
whereas I can get into the comics as well, but they are very different. Having watched The Walking Dead and read The Walking Dead, you've got to kind of treat them separately. But I know Tony Lee, who is the writer of that comic, I think he's quite respected. What was the artwork like? I must admit I haven't seen any of it.
Again, the problem is I thought it was good, but then I've heard people criticise it, but I don't have any comic knowledge, so, you know, it's like if what I think is pretty good, most people are, well, actually, they're doing that in the 80s, you know, hello, you know, so I don't know. But for me, it was fine, you know, and it was, I don't know if I'll get a second issue of it, I'm not quite sure if I'm that enthusiastic about it.
Comics as well these days. When I was a kid, I have got a Green Lantern comic from 1984 that I read every day for like 2 years, and last year I got it signed by Dave Gibbons. And I just remember comics being a lot longer, and now they're sort of like 23 pages, and that's it. You get through that in 5 minutes, as you say. Or maybe it's just me. Maybe when I was a kid, I was more engrossed in it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I was kind of looking for more, but the weird thing was when I was looking at the back of the issue, there was all the different ones. Though she didn't know they had like a Ghostbusters comic came out every month and stuff and things like that. And I was like, all right, really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well.
Yeah, they're reinventing them again, aren't they?
All right. But yeah, you know, so you know, it was pretty good. It wasn't rubbish, anything.
It was rubbish, wasn't it?
It wasn't rubbish, but I'm just bloody excited for the new series of Who, and seeing all these promo pictures, I just want to actually see the thing now. You know,
obviously,
you know, not with Jenna Louise Coleman because she's obviously next year. Well, Christmas, so.
Yes, now, is it just me, we're going off what we were going to talk about here, but in the blurb that they said about her, I'm sure I read somewhere Steve Moffat said she's an alien.
Or well,
I was told he was an alien. Possibly Leeson Fisher, who hasn't got a flipping factual bone in his body.
People have said she might be an alien, she might be from the 80s, she might be from the present day. And then they're going, oh, she looks like she's wearing modern day. You don't know. Do you know what I mean?
You think about the first pictures you saw of Matt Smith and Karen Gillan, like outside an ice cream van.
Of course, because he was dressed all goth, wasn't he, in that, all black, and everyone was like, oh, he was going to be this kind of emo doctor and stuff.
Where Matt Smith was still in the 10th Doctor's raggedy costume. And I think she might have even been in a police uniform, and everyone went, oh, you know, you make it. Immediate assumptions.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Because I'm thinking of the original Matt Smith publicity picture. Was him. Being all kind of quite gothy and like, ooh,
horrible.
But yeah, back on topic. You wanted to talk about the work of the Pixies.
Specifically the Pixies. No, Frank Black or Black Francis, right. Or Charles Michael Kittredge Thompson IV.
Right, wow. Well, I'll be bluntly honest with you. I've never really got into Pixies. Don't dislike them. Like some of their stuff, but I've never been massively passionate. Do you want to tell your tale of how you got into them and whatnot?
Someone that I knew introduced me to them. Somebody that I used to know.
Oh.
And it was kind of like my eyes were opened to the Pixies, but... This was about 1995, 96, very late. They'd been broken up a while. But, from that, I mean, I do love the Pixies, but from that, I also really like Frank Black, and specifically Frank Black and the Catholic stuff. I mean, his albums are pretty weird. The Pixies, everyone knows about the Pixies, but his first album after the Pixies was you could interchange... Well, you're not familiar with them, are you? Their last album was called Trompe Le Monde, and it was quite... it had keyboards on it. There wasn't so much of Kim Deal. And Trompe Le Monde and Frank Black, which was his first solo album, they're interchangeable, pretty much. The songs are similar. The production's similar. Same producer, I think. And he's great. And I saw him in 2001, he looked tiny. But then when he got on stage, he was huge, like the moon.
I just loved that iconic moment in Fight Club when the Pixies were Where's My Mind was used. And it was never on the official soundtrack and stuff, but it was just it just worked really well, didn't it?
He's written some amazing songs, well, him and Kim Deal and the rest of the Pixies, you know. Yeah. But I did get to go and see Frank Black in 2001 when he'd started to play Pixies songs again.
Yeah.
With the album Dog in the Sand, which is probably the pinnacle of what he's done post-Pixies. Dog in the Sand was kind of the pinnacle of his post-Pixies work, and he'd started to do Pixies songs again and was okay. And I can remember even hearing him on Jonathan Ross saying, yeah, I can do a Pixies song if you want, I'm okay with that now. And it was an amazing gig. Like the Frank Black solo stuff was great. The band were amazing. The Pixies songs that he did were amazing. It was completely packed. I think so. Was it Sheffield Lead Mill on a Saturday night? And it was amazing. And he is amazing. And he's done. I think probably the last good stuff that he did was, because his output's quite up and down. Do you know what I mean? I don't think any one of his solo albums is a sort of 5 out of 5 classic, but they're all 4 out of 5s.
Did you then get in the Breeders, or were you never a fan of them?
I think I've got one Breeders album, and obviously I like that song. Especially to jump up and down to at the discotheque. But no, Frank Black, really, I think he's one of my, you know, you have a few people that you think are then like heroes.
Yeah.
I think I could quite probably say he's my hero. But the problem was, I saw him about 2008. I went to Coco in London to see him, and he'd just become Black Francis again. And he kept going on about how he'd been to see Van Morrison, and Van Morrison didn't play any of his hits, and then didn't play a single song that I knew. It was just all new stuff, and it wasn't that great. Sorry, Frank Black, Black Francis, whoever you are.
Would you like a pint with them, do you think?
Yeah, I think I would probably. Do you remember he went on Adam and Joe?
Not really, no.
They used to do Vinyl Justice, and they'd go to a star's house and take the mickey out of their record collection. They went to Frank Black's house in LA or wherever it was he lived at the time. And I can remember hearing an Adam and Joe podcast, and I don't know if it was joking, but I've got a feeling it was serious that Adam was such a big fan of the Pixies. When he got to meet Frank Black, he just bombarded him with emails and until he was sort of told to stop. Which you would, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, you know, it's that's the problem you see when you meet someone that you revere, you know.
Never live up to it.
I mean, I've experienced that in terms of comedy icons, you know, and it's always tough because you still revere these people.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you're kind of a bit like, oh, but they are kind of normal, aren't they, really?
They're normal. Yeah. They should be normals.
Rory McAlpine on Facebook put forward Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire, right? And this has people like Phil Daniels, Alan Armstrong in, so I'm assuming it's English.
Okay.
And the tagline is, Cocky Cockney, that's a brilliant phrase anyway, Cocky Cockney snooker player Billy Kidd accepts the challenge of a grudge match from Maxwell Randall, the Green Bay's Vampire, 6 times world champion. The loser will never play professional snooker again.
Does sound
very random, doesn't it?
What's it called?
Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire. I don't know.
No.
It sounds like someone's invented it.
Yeah.
1987 it is. Yeah, basically Phil Daniels looks dead young in it.
Have you had confirmation of this? Is this real?
This is real, IMDb. I'm sending you a Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire so you know that it's actually a genuine real thing. It's on Amazon. There's people reviewed it and stuff.
Bloody hell.
You can buy the DVD of it, let's see what people say about it. I can't believe it. I've been waiting for the release of this little gem for years. I'd almost given up hope, but need to revisit my youth has kept me checking the TV guides for 3 a.m. Channel 4 slot. This is one of a better description. A musical snooker film with a tongue-in-cheek horror theme. Confused? Not convinced? Don't be. If you check out all the websites of this film, you'll see how special this film is. With the Phil Daniels playing the part of the kid, loosely based on Jimmy White.
Okay.
And it sounds mental. I've bowed down to Rory because he says he's actually got it on DVD as well, and it sounds very bizarre. Like, I can't think of fancy watching a musical snooker film.
What's it called again?
I've sent you the thing on the Skype text thing.
Yeah,
and it's just wow. They're charging $8.99 on Amazon.
That's what, pounds?
English pounds, yeah.
Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire. I'm going to try and look for a trailer.
I doubt it'll be a trailer.
Probably the film of it. There's got to be some of it. Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire. Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampires. No, it's not a trailer, you're right. It's just some stills and some music. Is that... Oh, it is, isn't it? It's like somebody took Quadrophenia and shat it out into a pie dish. That's weird.
It sounds worth a dabble. Why isn't it on ITV2 when you want it? Do you know what I mean?
That's a good question.
Yeah. I'd never heard of it before, be honest with you, so...
I can't look at any more of that. Phil Daniels is freaking me out. He's got, like, soul glow hair.
Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers is the next one.
Eliza! Eliza, the dirty Eliza. What's he put forward?
Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers from 1988, and the tagline is, they charge an arm and a leg. That is genius.
He's a dirty man.
Basically, Jack Chandler is a private eye tracking down Samantha, the runaway. In his travels, he comes across a gang of chainsaw-wielding prostitutes that like to carve people up for their cult. Now, that sounds like a film and a half.
Do you think Eliza is trying to groom us?
Well, there's a suggestion on the IMDb site as well, if you like this, and it's Serenity Babes in the Slime Ball Ballerama.
What? What is that? Is that to do with this film?
That's if people who like this also like this as well.
What else does he like?
I think they've only really got one suggestion. I've sent you the link to this Serenity Babes and Slime Ball. What else they could put forward as well? Someone's Knocking at the Door. That's another film.
Right.
And Return of the Living Dead.
And
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So pretty standard. It doesn't really say much more. It's from 1988, and it had a small budget, and that's about it, really.
1988, that's quite late. For some reason, the name struck me as being earlier than that. I don't know why. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Apparently, the quote is, "I stumbled in the middle of an evil, insidious cult of chainsaw-worshipping maniacs." Well, you know, they just get taken over by all these prostitutes with chainsaws, so, you know, it's a nightmare.
I'm struggling to keep hold of sanity.
But the Serenity Babes and Slime Ball Ballerama, that sounds like a 3D film if I've ever heard one.
Oh man. I've just had a look at the cover for that. Oh my god.
It is a good cover. If you saw that for £1, you would think, yeah, I might do, you know. It could be worth it. It would be pretty amusing.
I don't think so.
The next one is by, he's basically a bit of a celebrity, gotta be honest with you. We're having celebrities now.
We should thank those other two guys. That was Rory McAlpine and Eliza the Dirty Man.
Martin Way from the pop band Heaven 17.
Yeah.
And who used to be in the original Human League, put forward Space Patrol. But yes, science fiction series featuring marionettes out in 1962. It's a British show.
Too early for me, Martin.
Gotta be honest with you, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it. It follows the actions of the Interplanetary Police Force in the year 2100. And focus on the crew of the Galasphere 317 under command of the heroic Captain Larry Dart. That's a great name. Larry Dart. The crew includes Elfin Slim from Venus, Sausage Mad Husky from Mars.
Oh.
And the Martian Parrot Gabbler, providing technical support, is Irish genius Professor Hegarty. Keep them all on the tight rein are Colonel Rayburn and his super efficient Venusian secretary Maria. That sounds pretty interesting.
Oh yes, who was it made by? It wasn't Gerry Anderson, was it?
It wasn't, but it was someone called Roberta Lee, and she'd worked with Gerry Anderson before, so that's why there's kind of similarities between Fireball XL5 as well. Anderson.
Sorry, did you say Roberta Flack?
Roberta Lee.
Roberta Lee.
Yeah, yeah. So that's out on DVD as well already.
Yeah, I don't remember it at all. I mean, I remember stuff like Stingray and obviously Thunderbirds and Joe 90 and stuff. But yeah, that's passed me. And Space 1999. But passed me by what we were just talking about there.
What it says as well is that the music used in the opening sequence may be the first TV theme to be realised entirely through electronic means, even though people think it was Doctor Who.
Oh, what year was it, sorry?
62.
Oh, yeah.
It actually premiered around, I think it was early 63. So I think it was started in 62 sort of time, production stuff. So it's slightly, obviously Doctor Who obviously claimed it because it's cooler. Incidentally, I've been, on a cult note, I've been listening to quite a lot of Delia Derbyshire stuff recently.
Yeah, you were saying about that. I didn't catch it.
I listened to this thing on For Extra about her life and stuff. And then I've been listening to some radiophonic stuff.
Yeah.
Blows me mind how amazing it was for that time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, pure visionaries, you know. Wow.
Unassuming as well, weren't they? I mean, they didn't.
Yeah,
When was the Radiophonic Workshop shut down? Was it about 83 or something like that?
I know it was 80s sort of time, yeah.
Yeah. And even now when they're sort of interviewed for Who and stuff, they're just really chilled out, seem like quite nice people to want to talk to.
But also Space Patrol, if I find any on the web, I'll definitely have a dabble.
Yeah, I'll have a look for it. Thanks, Martin, for your suggestion. We'll have a look for that.
Terrahawks was suggested by someone called Leeson Fisher. I don't know what he does. Apparently, he's in some sort of like mediocre Doctor Who podcast and Radio Rassilon as well.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh yeah.
Oh, cashback.
But yeah, it was a 1980s sci-fi series produced by the Anderson man, Jerry Anderson. It was his first one in over a decade. So obviously did Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet and whatnot.
Do you remember Terrahawks? Because you're a big...
I kind of do, but I don't have a massive knowledge of it. But yeah, I kind of remember it because I'm not sure when it was in the 80s.
Must have been mid 80s.
Yeah, 83 to 86.
80, yeah. Really? It ran that long? Crikey.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can remember it vividly. I mean, I had Zeroids coming out my arse.
I kind of remember it. I mean, I'm just looking. It now says, set in the year 2020, the series followed the adventures of Terrahawks, a task force responsible for protecting Earth from invasion by a group of extraterrestrial androids and aliens led by Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda.
Yeah, so it ran for, I think, like three or so. Two series. Jerry Anderson, for me, I appreciate what he does, but I'm never going to be like a massive fan of Jerry Anderson's work, you know. It's kind of, you know, what he did was obviously quite visionary at the time and stuff. But like, I think for me, it was one of the first things I encountered was Space Precinct by him, and then obviously I saw all this stuff from back in the day. And that was a bit ropey.
What, Space Precinct?
Yeah.
Was that with that guy out of like Knots Landing or something?
That's it. Yeah, it was him. Yeah, and it was a bit. But so Terrahawks is does it have kind of like a cult thing in your heart? Do you kind of still revere it or?
Yeah, I mean, it was just it was kind of classy. I don't think you could get away with showing it now so much, but.
Yeah, so I'm sure that somewhere I'll have it on some sort of obscure channel, you know. It'll probably have some sort of ITV4 type job.
Oh yeah,
it'll show that sort of thing. But it's something that I would dabble in, definitely have it, because I kind of saw bits of it when I was young. But it's not something that I've really got into. Or I would like think, oh, that's DVD-able anything. For me, it's kind of it. I don't know. I think it puts us off when stuff's kind of got puppets in and stuff like that. I'm a bit. I'm not saying I'm anti puppet.
You're not anti puppet.
I'm not anti puppet, but you know, I'm not pro puppet. I never thought I'd say that sentence in my life. But.
No, it's a weird one, isn't it? Puppets, because I mean, even with Terrahawks, which was pretty advanced in the 80s. Terrahawks, it was great. You had the Zeroids, you had the cube things, I can't remember what they were called. At the end, they did battle on the Noughts and Crosses board. That was amazing. The music was great. It had great spaceships. It had Zelda and those other people that were all... I can't remember what the... She had, I think, a son and a sister. Can't remember. But the Zeroids are brilliant. I mean, one of them was Windsor Davies, for Christ's sake. And they had those little... Do you remember the Zeroids? There was a sort of balls, robot...
Not really, no.
They were robot balls, man. Not like testes, but, you know, they were kind of like...
Like the Toclofane on Doctor Who.
Yes, and about that size as well.
Right.
But they had some sort of, if I remember rightly, sorry, I've had a pint now, I'm being quite talkative. If I remember rightly, certainly Zero, Sergeant Zeroid, who my cat is partly named after, he was able to change his mass somehow. There was quite a lot of quite sci-fi ideas in there. But they were just balls, and they'd roll around, and they'd have little eye pieces going across their eyes, and you know, they were different characters. The Zeroids are brilliant. I must admit, the Zeroids are my favourite bit.
Well, that's at least you had a favourite bit.
Exactly.
You know. But yeah, if we just say as well, I'm on Twitter as well. I'm IanTodd82, and what are you, Harry?
I'm at Harry Medium.
But yeah, if you want to kind of suggest anything, them Twitter handles, you know, or bother us on Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah. Do it. I dares you. If you like the Cult, not the band, but Cult stuff, listen to Cultism. EastEnders isn't a cult.